Why, hello, Healing Trauma Mamas. Welcome back to the podcast today. I'm excited to have a guest on the podcast with me today. So, you're very blessed today, to get to have Rachel Anderson, on here with me. And Rachel, would you mind introducing yourself for a moment?
Hi, everyone. I'm Rachel Anderson, Texas licensed midwife, CPM, and missionary of all things. I live in a very remote area of the world in East Africa, where I live there actually with my family, which is a changing dynamic as my children get older. I have six kids, a great husband who is a pastor and an engineer type, can fix a lot of things. And in my location, besides midwifing people, I also run a home for outcast women and their children, as well as a multitude of other random things, which hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about all that.
Yes, I hope so. Absolutely. I want to dive into all of it because I just am always curious to hear about other women's journeys, to hear, how the Lord's brought them to where they are at this point. And I know all of us have like such an amazing like way that we got where we are and so many different things that we've been through. And I'm sure you have plenty of those yourself. And you're a mama as well. I don't think I heard you mention that. But I'm sure that helps a lot with all the work that you do as well to kind of I feel like all my challenges with my children have really helped to be able to interact with other women because you have a lot more empathy and you can understand kind of some of the things that they're going through. And so I know that's for me very helpful. So I figure in your line of work, that's probably helpful as well.
Yeah, I'm going to give full disclosure for your listeners today and say today is going to be a blatant recruitment podcast for women in cross-cultural missions. Let me just I'll just give you a little backstory. We moved to East Africa in 2008 with five kids, ages five and under. So our oldest was 5 years old. We moved in January and he turned six in February. And we moved to Zanzibar, which is an island off the coast of Tanzania. It's actually an archipelago, which it took me 5 years to learn how to say the word archipelago. So I'm going to use it right now. And we lived on the main island of Zanzibar, which the Swahili call Unguja. And it's like 99% Islamic. And lived there for about a year. I picked up quite a bit of Kiswahili while living there and tried to learn how to homeschool children in a third world context or a developing world context. And then we moved from an island paradise up to the deserts of northern Kenya, which, we went from about 90 degrees and 100% humidity to about 120 degrees and no humidity. And just dry, barren, open land. Imagine some of the most desertous places in North America, and that's what you get in the area that we're at. And we moved there, and a few years later, we had our sixth child. So, yeah, I have kids, six kids, and I just want to really like express how needed women in cross-cultural missions is are because it's a tough field.
I can't imagine. I mean, I haven't been in that field myself, so.
Yeah, I mean, and it's tough and it's doable. And like right now, what I'm doing is living in a desert place. My oldest child now is married, and we're in this whole transition where children are moving out of our house and becoming the adults that we always hoped they would be and chasing after their own dreams and building their own lives. But I'm running a home for outcast women and their children. And one of the things that I've seen over the last, since 08, so what, the last 16 years, is a real need within young churches, cross-culturally, and among unreached people groups for women to model Christianity. Because what we found in our group and in most of the groups in northern Kenya that are less than 3% Christian, our area is less than 1%, is that there is such a lack of female understanding of the gospel and how that makes a difference in how you raise your children, how you treat your husband, how you use your resources, instead, and how you are seen as far as your value, as far as being created in God's image. Like, that's just completely lacking. And because oftentimes when missionaries move over, wives are trying to homeschool the kids and do housework, it's really hard to stretch ourselves to reach out into the communities. And so it's almost like we need more of us than we have of our husbands in some ways, or more singles who are just hanging out trying to figure out what God has for them. I'm telling you, God has a great plan for you, and I'm ready to tell you, because there's just a wide open door of women who need to know what it looks like to live a life that is honoring to something bigger than this world has to offer.
And sometimes I think we get kind of stuck in our little world and we're not looking beyond at all. And I know that God doesn't have boundaries up for us like that. Like it's very expansive, the reach that he has for us for each one of our lives. And walking into that, I'm sure, is a big, huge step. And I do think that like we're all called, but there are people that he has definitely put into them to just really have a love for that cross-cultural stuff. And obviously, every time I've spoken to you, that's very evident. And so it's really neat to hear.
Yeah, I think sometimes a lot of people think about it, but don't really think about it seriously, and I would, if I could speak to a specific group, it would be these young ladies who have just finished college or finishing college, or you're just starting your family. It's actually a really great time when your kids are little to move into a new thing like cross-cultural missions because your children are more moldable. And if you're single, what do you got to lose? I mean, if you run into a single guy on the mission field, I'm telling you, he loves the Lord. You're not going to find a better guy anywhere than one who is committed to serving God in a, in a church cross-cultural context. And I think it's just really easy to like live day in and day out, just kind of going, well, maybe if I learn this, I'll be ready to do something like that. Or maybe if my family has this, we'll be ready to do it. But I'm telling you, there's never going to be a good time to do it. That's for sure. And you're never going to know enough. All right. One of the things I had to start learning, and I'm by no means like, I know like five phrases at this point. One of the things I had to start learning and started teaching one of my ladies was Kenyan Sign Language. Like, we started looking
Interesting.
up videos. Yeah, she's got a kid who's deaf who speaks sign. And, like, the only thing I can do is like the alphabet and good morning at this point because I've forgotten everything that I taught his mom. But his mom was like, this is great. Now I can like pray with him, like, because she was learning the Lord's Prayer in Kenyan Sign Language, and like, she doesn't need to be able to speak English to learn how to say things in signed because it means the same thing, right? You can
Right.
sign good morning in English, you can sign good morning in Spanish, and still means the same thing as long as you're using the same country's sign language. So, like, nothing could have prepared me for that,
It's the preparation, maybe not so much. It's the more jumping in.
I think so. I think a lot of it is just, shaking off our anxiety, shaking off our fear, shaking off our desire to be perfect, like it before, like I gotta have all this in order and I've gotta be able to do this. Like we live in a social media culture that tells us that we have to be beautiful and smart and know everything before we can do anything. And that those are not the people God is gonna use. He's gonna use broken vessels.
So maybe you could kind of go back a little bit and kind of tell us a little bit more of your journey of just how you got to this place.
I grew up in a nominally Christian family. My parents still go to church, and in fact, I'd say they're closer to the Lord now than they were when I was a kid. But things were pretty rocky without getting into mountains of detail. And I came to Christ reading the instructions for salvation in the back of a Gideon Bible. And then I saw a missionary speak about missions, and I thought, well, God would never use me to do something that cool. You know, like God would never use me to do something that big or cool, and kind of put it off. And then at the end of high school, I kind of felt like, no, I really think God wants me to do missions, cross-cultural missions. And went to school for that for a bit. I had a big emotional breakdown, so to speak, for a little while. Met my spouse, and we got married and started having kids right away. And kind of the rest is history. I did one short-term trip in college to Nigeria, and we did one short-term trip as a couple to Tanzania, and then we moved in 08. Yeah.
Nice. So you moved at the time when you moved in 08, how many children did you have?
Five, and our
Five.
oldest was 5 years old, and he turned six like 2 months after we moved.
Wow.
So it was a lot. I mean, I look back and I'm like, boy, I must have had the energy of like a thousand sons, like chasing after all those little ones and like bringing them to East Africa. But it was like, God's got this. You know, my husband said something really wise when we were preparing to go, and he said, you know, yeah, something bad could happen to you or to your kids when you're serving overseas, but wouldn't you feel worse if that same thing happened in your home context and you knew you'd been called to another context?
Very
And
true.
that was really helpful to really think about. You know, I forgot, I wanted to tell you a story.
Well, there's lots of stories I'm sure you want to tell. Well, you made me think about something I've talked about on the podcast a lot lately is not compromising the vision the Lord has given you, not compromising that calling that you know that He has put on your life, and truly stepping into it all the way. So hit me with stories. I love it.
All right. Yeah, I actually wanted to start out with a story. So maybe you'll have to splice this in somehow to make it fit, or maybe it'll just fit really well naturally here and we'll just see. My husband comes from a family of missionaries. Okay. So his great grandmother, Vivian Anderson, was an American who worked in Kenya, and her husband was Danish. And there was a point in their ministry. Okay. So they started out in this little town, little village called Letang. And then they had moved away from that because her husband was a really good carpenter and everybody needed him to build stuff. So he kind of traveled around fixing things, doing things and whatnot, which is still a need everywhere on the field. No matter what anybody tells you, we still need people to come around and fix things. Anyway, she got very ill and doctors looked at her and her husband and said, Vivian, you're going to die. I mean, it's just a matter of days to months at the most. And you know, of course, at that time, you know, she's not gonna try to go where some extended family would be because it would have been a ship, you know, and she might have died on the ship. So she says to her husband, I want to go back to the place where we started. So they moved back to Letang. And he is doing work outside of the home, and she is basically bedridden. But as is just normal in any village context, and particularly in the early 1900s, you know, children didn't go to school because there were no schools. You know, there was a handful of schools in like different areas, but in that area, there wasn't a school at that point. And there would be children just hanging around, and they'd come stand outside the door of the house, and she would see them. So she had her bed moved where she could get close enough to them, and from her dying bed, she starts telling them Bible stories. Then she starts teaching them to read and write. She made a full recovery. And those children to this day now have a school in their village. They have a hospital in their village. They have a nurse's training college in their village. They have just turned everything around. And she did all that from what she thought was her deathbed, lying down, teaching children Bible stories. And her husband never had time for that, right? And that's the thing, is that not all women are nurturers. Not all women are like, oh, I want to work with children, you know. But typically women tend to be more, you know, oriented towards children, and
Yes.
children need the Bible. In fact, they used to say about the 10:40 window, which was like over the Middle East, but now in missions, people talk about the 1420 window or the 614 window, where you have all these children who are growing up and they're not reached. I mean, even if their parents have some understanding of who Christ is, their children aren't reached. And in our village, their parents don't even know who Jesus is. So no one is there teaching them the Bible, not anyone, other than whoever's willing to do it, right? And so again, this is where I go back and say, ladies, you don't know what to do with yourself. You're finishing college. You know, this is a great opportunity, right? Like,
Yeah.
you get a free audience right away because the kids are like, hey, we want to hear the story because somebody's willing to sit with us and talk. And what's typical in a lot of, like, in our context and a lot of other contexts is that, especially, a lot of children don't go to school until they're 8 years old. And those children that are especially like between 4 and 8 years old, they have not a lot to do all day. And so anyone who wants to reach out to them can reach out to them. And they're just ready. They're ready to soak up all of this attention, all of this care, all of this love. And then their moms, when they see that you care about their children, they're ready to hear.
Yeah.
What do you got to share with me? Why do you care about my kid? And they want to talk to you.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. So what would that look like? So if a young woman did decide that she wanted to come help with this for maybe for a time at least, right? So what would that even look like for her? Like walk me through as a person who has never done anything like that before. I did apply for my passport. I still have not got it yet, because I've talked on the podcast before. A friend of mine does a missions work in Uganda, and it's been on my mind to hopefully at some point get to go help with something. So that's as far as I personally have ever done. I've done some mission work in Laredo area, with over the border and stuff, but that's it. So walk me through it. Like I know nothing because I don't.
Well, there are a million organizations in the world. And so the first thing is like, know where you're at theologically, know how you fit in theologically with an organization, know how the organization works structurally so that you can roll with that, know how they handle their finances. When you're choosing an organization, choose one that is financially transparent, whose leadership system is transparent, and who has a good reputation in evangelical circles. Don't just join. There's these what we call clearinghouse organizations, which basically they just handle your money and put you on a plane and say, go to it. I can't recommend that because the support is so little as far as your emotional and psychological well-being goes. So those are things to ask about when you're looking at organizations. I work with Africa Inland Mission International for multiple reasons, partly family history, partly they're good size. They do have emotional support. They are very transparent with our finances. They're very ethically correct with finances. I don't have to worry about getting a donation and they put it somewhere else. It always goes to where the person asks for it to go.
Okay.
So those are the kind of things you're going to look for. The other thing you're going to look for is where do you want to work? Like, if you hate being hot, don't go work in a desert. Like, but if you hate being cold like me, like we all know, I am like the refrigerator over here. It's keep me away. Then the desert's a great idea because there are people that are still going into places that are a lot colder than my area. I can think of Tibet and China, Nepal, even areas of Russia that are open still. Those places, are colder.
Yeah.
And it might be more a person's shtick. They might be what a person wants. And then the other thing is to think about is your skill set, because typically you do need some kind of skill set to get a work permit in another country or a visa in another country. It doesn't always have to be like a huge skill set. It could be an administrative skill set. Having a degree can be really helpful, because it
That's
just
what I
gives
was going
some
to ask, like
legitimacy.
are there specific, like, yeah, how do you show that you have that skill set? And what specific skill set, especially if we're talking, you're really calling out to women to come and help, like, what particular skill sets are you thinking? I mean, like, I'm the handyman at our house. So you were talking about, like, handyman and fixing things. I'm like, well, that's kind of me. But that may not be, I know in different cultures that's not taken as well, you know, right? Like they expect somebody else to come in and do that, and women maybe to have different roles. So, in like, say, your area where you're at, what type of skill sets would somebody maybe want to look for to go?
Well, I'll tell you what, in our area, we have had women handymen. In fact, we had a carpenter who built a guest house that is still standing to this day. He
Awesome.
built it in like the 80s. Okay.
That's
So,
great.
right. So, like, if you're really good at it, nobody will care if you're a girl or a guy. Does that make sense? And like, when you drive down the road in Kenya, you see women in construction all the time.
Really, that's awesome.
All the time. It's just a different mindset. There are ways in which male and female relationships are gendered in a different way than they are here.
Okay.
But like, as far as like manual labor goes, it's the women that are working the farms, right?
Really?
Like,
Yep.
in our culture, there can be certain jobs that women aren't allowed to do. But as far as like, when you think of more Western type things, if you were an electrician, you would be able to do things like wiring solar panels, installing water pumps for wells that are put in. You wouldn't be drilling it, because if you're an electrician, you're not going to do the drilling, but you could do the electricals, like, right? Because most of our water
Nice.
pumps are run by solar.
Yeah.
If you are a computer person, you could teach computer skills. You might have to bring computers or buy computers or whatever else, but you could teach that to people in our community, because everybody wants to know how to use a computer, because everybody recognizes that that's the direction that the world is headed. If you are a photographer, teach people to take photos, right? So, like, the world is huge as far as what you do. I'm just saying, have a skill,
Yeah.
you know, and it's good to have a degree of some kind, just because. With the world changing as rapidly as it is, a lot of low-income countries are looking for people with that piece of paper just to prove that they have something. You might not do what's on your piece of paper,
Gotcha.
but you know, you have something to prove it. So, like,
Right.
I know nurses who don't do anything related to health work. They do other things, like they write literacy programs, or they might teach gardening, or they might do community health. My husband's degree was in cross-cultural studies. That's what my degree is in. But he is now involved in radio, right? Like, he never did anything in radio until a few years ago, when God gave him a bunch of money to put up a radio station.
That's
So,
awesome.
you know, again, if you wait for the skills to come all the time too, this is the flip side, right? Have a skill, but if you wait until the skill is perfected, you'll never go, right? Like, it's like becoming a midwife. You're a midwife. You know what this is like. You're never fully ready.
And always learning, always learning.
Right. You're always learning new
Yeah.
things.
Yeah. But and I think also resting on, you know, I mean, what scripture says about, you know, the Lord will equip you for, you know, what he's called you to. So I never go into a situation thinking, well, I'm not going to be able to possibly do it. Well, no, I know that I'm going to be talking to him and he's going to give me what I need in that situation. So I would say the same thing there. Like, you know, maybe didn't know anything about running a radio station, but hey, the Lord provided and here it is, and so he's going to learn.
Right.
Yeah,
And
that's
and
awesome.
a lot of times you get to a location and there are organizations that run trainings for things that you want to learn. Like, I took what is called it's called Farming God's Way, also called conservation agriculture. I took a training with them because I wanted to understand those concepts and started teaching people how to garden in the desert. You know, I didn't
Nice.
know how to do that, you know, and they're very kind to me and said, "Look, you don't know how to hoe a garden the way we do in East Africa." And I'm like,
I'm
"What?
sure.
Don't know how to do that." But they just were patient and they taught me, you know, like, it's just what it is. You got to learn and be ready to go.
Can't help but think it might be a little similar to West Texas dirt.
Yeah, a little bit.
So, go ahead.
Yeah, back to the path, like, so those are some things that to look for. If you talk to people who are missionaries, you'll get ideas of different organizations. Do you know what I mean? Like, you talk to me, I know the organizations that I know, but I don't know like a lot about organizations working in the Asian continent, which is a huge, geographically huge area. I just know a bit about who works in East Africa and a bit who works in the rest of the African continent. So talking to people you know who already do that work can help you find an organization. And then a lot of people, what they like to do is a short-term trip, as in like 3 months or 6 months, to try out a location to get a feel for what is this like.
Yeah, I was
I
wondering
would
about
also,
that.
right. I would say with that though, a caveat is I was miserable when I was short term because that's just me. When we finally moved, I had to get past that miserable stage and then adjusted. So even if you have a difficult experience short term, it doesn't mean you're going to be smooth sailing long term. It just means that if you're still called, you're just plain called and you just got to get along with that difficulty.
So you guys didn't move until your youngest was around five.
No, our
Or your
oldest was five.
oldest. Okay, sorry. So
I
in
have
between.
five kids, five and under.
Gotcha. Wow. Okay. So did you do the
Look on
short
your
term?
face.
Well, it's just I had four, five and under, and I remember where I was at that stage, and we've moved a lot in our life, but never would I have thought to move across the world. Just would not have like fathomed. It was so much work just moving across the town or across states, which we did do a couple of times. So I can't even imagine packing them all up and adding one and going, overseas. So I'm just trying to think this out. So before then, before you guys be when she was five, or it was your oldest a girl, I'm sorry.
He's a boy.
Boy, sorry about that.
Well, he's a big man now.
Well, so when he was around five and you guys decided to move for full time, before then, how did you were you taking small short term trips? And were the kids
We
coming
took the
along?
short term. I was pregnant with our oldest when we did our short term trip together as a married couple. And then we just always knew we were going to do it.
Okay.
So we didn't really worry about doing trips in between. We just took the plunge and went and did 3 years before we came on a home assignment, which was healthy. 3 years was a really healthy time because we got adjusted, got to the point where we weren't wishing we were somewhere else anymore. We're getting used to the culture, getting used to just coping. Yeah, it was a good chunk of time. And by
Nice.
then, did I have my last? I think I had my last one and brought him on home assignment with us.
So how does that
Yeah.
work? I know like right now you're on, it's called furlough in the States.
Yeah, furlough, home assignment. You so every organization kind of has a guideline for how you do it. I know there's one organization that does a month every year. We've
Okay.
never done that. We usually do 2 to 4 years and then take 6 months to a year out. So this time we're doing 1 year out. We've done a compassionate leave in there to support one of our college age kids. But both of the, and then I did a little bit of a leave, educational leave to finish up my midwifery in
Right.
2018, I think it was 2019, 2018 to 2019, somewhere in there. So yeah, we're in the States right now for a year. I'm finishing a CPM to BSN, which is a lot of letters. It means not a lot to a lot of people, other than it's a midwifery bachelor's degree.
So true.
And my husband is running around doing all the support raising this year, being his wonderfully extroverted self.
Nice.
And right now he's even at a radio conference and having living his best life with a whole bunch of radio and media personalities.
Oh, that's great. So you mentioned fundraising. So I have seen in the past different people that we've tried to help support that were going overseas and stuff, and they were responsible for all their fundraising. So like they would come back to the States, they would go to different churches telling them what we're doing. This is, and give little presentations and stuff. People would donate, and then that would be all the money that they raised for them to go live off of now when they go there. Is that similar to what you guys do?
Yep, we raise support and we have monthly donors and we have one-time donors and we have donors who give to the projects that we oversee because we have the so this is where again a good organization is really helpful is people can give us personal donations and those kind of things help us live, right? Like they help us be able to get to our location, buy food, send our kids to school, all of that kind of thing. Come on home assignment, that's part of that. But then like people can also donate to like our radio ministry and that is completely separate and we do not touch that for any personal needs. So that covers like paying radio DJs, doing improvements on the radio station. If we wanted to buy something for the radio, like a new computer, because every once in a while we have to buy a new computer, a new soundboard, that all comes out of that account. Our home for outcast women and their children, people donate to that. That covers their needs. So, like their food needs, their schooling needs, whatever else, building, whatever, that covers that. Again, that's where like a good organization handles money ethically so that people can be sure that when they give money to our, what we call our Village of Hope, our outcast ladies, they know that I don't get that to pay for my steak dinner. That pays for their dinner.
And are you, so your organization keeps track of that stuff for you. You don't have to keep track of that.
They keep track of a lot of it, but okay, so this is also again, we're going to get back into like ethics again because so we do a project report every year. So we get receipts, we turn in the receipts, we get reimbursed for different expenditures that we make all throughout the year. And then at the end of every year, everything is audited. And so every receipt has to be looked at a second time by ourselves as well as our office. And then that's all put into the file together to show that, we've handled the money the correct way according to our project guidelines. They've handled our money the right way. The office in the US has handled our money the right way. So, yeah,
That's
it's
a good
nice
checks and
because,
balances there, though.
because, we've seen things where people are like, I'm raising money for this, but they're not. Like, they're actually pocketing money for themselves. It's scary. It's not ethical. It's not right. And so, as much as it's a lot of work on everybody's end, I think it's worth it in the long run.
Well, that's great. So, I had another question about that, and I have to think about what it was real quick. I didn't write it down.
That's all right. Easy enough to do.
So
It's a
your
wild.
particular organization that you guys work with is a non-denominational organization.
Yeah. There are denominational organizations doing great work. We just chose to be with a non-denominational organization. Just it suited where we were at theologically.
So I just wanted to encourage anybody listening, like you don't have to, like you said, kind of see where you line up with, but you don't have to be straightforward as 100% with some specific organization or specific type of church. So that's good to know. You just gotta love Jesus and be him.
That's correct. I mean, most organizations have a doctrinal statement, and you just would want to read through that, make sure you agree with that doctrinal statement, that it suits where you're at. You should know the what you believe, right? Like you should have a pretty good foundation of your own interpretation of the scriptures because, when the going gets tough, you need to know what you believe. You need to know where your heart is, or you're going to have problems. You're going to become discouraged. You're going to become anxious. You're going to get depressed because you don't have that foundation. So, because those temptations are real everywhere in the world. And when you become a missionary, it's not like you're suddenly immune from the temptation to be anxious about something or to get depressed when something isn't going your way or, any of those things. Lose your temper, right? Because people can be really dumb. That doesn't change.
Doesn't change because you went across the ocean.
Somehow that the ocean doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't. So I'm just thinking about just, I mean, Obviously you've got to have a heart for people to be able to go and serve that way, which we should all have a heart for people, obviously. I mean, love each other, love the Lord. I mean, that's the commands that we have in our new covenant that we're supposed to be exemplifying every day. And obviously going and caring for people who haven't seen that, who aren't experiencing that all the time is a really wonderful thing to do. So if somebody wanted to do that and say like work with children, I'm trying to think of different like degree things because we talked about that. Like that would be good. Like I know somebody that has like extremely gifted in just loving on children and talking with them and enjoying them and all that, but they don't have like a teaching degree or anything like that. So what would be something to really show that or that they could go a direction?
You could have studied early childhood development. You could have studied social work, psychology, anything like that. And like I said, that degree is more just to show the government like that you're not a dumb cluck trying to like. In the past, there have been people from America who kind of thought, well, I should be allowed to live in Africa because I'm smarter than that guy because he, doesn't have my experiences. And the things are just changing because, so many people in the world, in the low income countries even, are going to college. And so, for the government, especially like in Kenya, government officials all have to have a minimum of a bachelor's degree to be a politician. And to get a job in the government, you have to at least have a college diploma of some kind or a degree. You can't even get a job like as a secretary in the government system. So when they see somebody coming from the States who just doesn't have anything, it can be a problem. Now, there are other countries where it matters less still. And I don't know all the details of immigration in every country at all. Like it's so complicated. It's wise to have something
Yeah, I
just
think
to
that makes
say, like,
sense. Yeah, and I think that's also good that they're like kind of vetting people coming into the country, and just trying to, make sure that they actually have a purpose and they actually have, some credentials behind them that they're coming in to do whatever the specific thing is instead of just all infiltrating, and who knows what. So, I think that's actually really good. I'm just trying to think of different things, different fields that would be very good and helpful.
I mean, if you finish your degree and your degree was in being, I know somebody who's a chef, like literally, he is a professional chef. So for a while in missions, he worked on a mercy ship and he cooked for the entire ship.
Nice.
Now, then he worked in DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, and developed a nutrition program for a hospital. And now he is in another country checking things out and thinking about how he can fit in there. But when he's doing that nutrition program in Congo, he's not cooking for anybody. He is
Yeah.
like finding out what do people eat locally? How can this be prepared in a way that works for more people? Where can we get the nutrition from that people are needing, that they're struggling with? Can people grow things? So he started gardening. He started cooking snails. He started cooking like
Nice.
banana snails, not like our cute little snails that are in a can or whatever among rich people, but like banana snails that are like 6 to 12 inches long. He learned to cook those, So just really
Whoa.
cool things. Yeah.
Yeah,
Like
that's awesome.
really. And he does the nutrition cooking thing still because he enjoys it. But at the same time, he's mentoring young men. He's a single guy himself, so he's mentoring young men. I have another friend from Australia, and I don't even know what his training is. And he has started an organization that mentors, he's single himself, he's mentoring young men in Bible and then in discipleship and teaching them to become evangelists. And then he's sending kids to school, he's drilling wells. And he's doing like a relief program for widows.
Wow.
Like, you can't get a degree in that. You
No,
just,
not at
I mean,
all.
really, you just need a degree in compassion.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you love people and you're going to go and you're going to do things. You made me think me too about discipleship. That's actually been on my mind a lot lately. Because I was really just looking at like, what is a disciple? You know, we have a tendency to make programs, right? And with tendency to be like, okay, this 10-step program is you discipling this person or that person, right? That's our tendency, right? We want to format it and make it look like this or whatever. But I mean, that's actually not what we're shown. We're shown discipleship is walking out a particular a life of love and compassion every day. And disciples are people who come along with you in that life and they emulate you. And they're learning as you're learning and you're going and doing things. And I mean, that's what a disciple truly is. And so obviously we're all disciples, you know, that we're learning and growing in our walk with the Lord and how we share that and how his love is poured into us and through us to others. And then as we're coming along and we're telling people and they see that love through us, then they're wanting to come along too. And they're learning with you and you're growing together in that. And it's not some specific program and some specific, you know, like booklet to follow. It's life.
That's exactly right. In our community, we started this home for outcasts because for multiple reasons, and one of the big things was for the sake of discipleship. In our community, if a young lady is raped or gets pregnant and she's not married, she's considered an outcast. And within the last 10 to 20 years, the community stopped stoning them to death. So the punishment used to be stone the girl to death if she's found pregnant. They stopped doing that, but what they would do is bring them to another town and then just leave them there. And the parents would have nothing to do with them. And the family wasn't allowed to do anything for them. So we created this home for these young ladies. And right now we just have five of them because it's really hard work. And taking in more, we need more personnel to take in more, quite frankly. So the only reason we don't have 50 is because we don't have enough people to help with discipleship.
Yeah.
Because part of the program is making them safe so they can learn. Because if you are not in a safe environment, if you are living in fear every day and you are living not knowing where your next piece of bread is going to come from, you cannot learn. You cannot grow. You cannot change. Your cortisol levels are
Oh,
too
they're just
high.
like
Your stress is too high.
skyrocketed.
Oh,
Yeah, you're in that fight, flight, or freeze constant state, and you
Constantly.
can't make decisions,
Constantly.
you can't learn something.
Right.
You can't.
Right.
Yeah.
So we wanted to make sure they're safe. And then the second thing was introducing them to the Bible and to like proper biblical, like Bible concept. So that part of discipleship is in it. And then the third thing was teaching them education. So they're learning to read and learning to sew, learning to crochet, learning to do beadwork, learning to do like hand embroidery. They've learned to make cakes, they're learning to decorate cakes. And as they're learning to do these things, they're being discipled. Like as you learn to sew, you learn to be a good steward with your material by not, measuring the wrong way and losing something.
Right, yeah.
As you learn to make a cake, you're learning to be really precise about how you do that, those measurements again. And so there's just all these things that you don't really think about as somebody in a high-income country that you just kind of take for granted that are opportunities for discipleship. We had a class on menstrual health and could talk about how God had created our bodies,
Nice.
and they'd never heard anybody say to them that God made their body to be this way. And everything that is revolves around like menstrual health for our community is ucky and dirty and bad. And we got to sit there and talk about how it's good and how it's part of God's creation and just so many concepts of biblical like principles just right into just plain old menstrual health.
Yeah.
Raising their children, learning that they have to be responsible for their children, that they have to, save money to pay for things for their children, that they are the ones that are in charge of their children still. And that they can tell their children no, like those are just new things. But you don't get to do that discipleship if you are not one on one or five on
Yeah.
one or ten, a group of 10, if you're not walking alongside of people. And that's why people need to go to the field, not
Yeah.
just money. You know, I think it's really easy to like just throw money at things, like throw money at Rachel because she's already doing it. Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. I'm really glad that God's providing for our ministry. But we need people because
Yeah.
people disciple people, not money, not books. You know, the Bible does lead people, but we've had communities walk to our village, our house, walk 20 miles on foot to say, could you tell us more about Jesus? We're hearing about him on the radio. We've listened to the Bible on our audio, but we don't understand what we're hearing. You know, and you read this in the Ethiopian eunuch, right? He says, how can I understand this if no one explains it to me? Well, that hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Like in 2,000 years, God, in his infinite crazy wisdom, still wants to use people to share his word with people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you were talking before, we were talking about just, you know, like loving on that child. Well, and the mom seeing that and her knowing like you are loving on that child because you need to pour this love out, and it's not for an our I can't use my words right now, an ulterior motive. It's not for something else. It's literally so I can pour out love onto you and I can help you show you how to love your child better and how to walk with them better and help parent them a little bit better, or maybe to help show them how they could feed them a little more nutritious, or like you said, making things go a little further and just helping them walk into that. And obviously, somewhere that's lacking, you know, like I often think like, well, shouldn't that come from generational, like, you know, we're teaching, but obviously there's been a lot of unrest. There's been a lot of things that have happened that they're not getting that. And we're not getting that in the United States a lot now too. That doesn't happen. Like our families like get separated, trauma happens, whatever happens in between, and we don't actually have that as well. And instead, we try to find our tribe. We try to find our group of women that we can pour into each other, to learn and grow with each other.
Right. I've thought a lot about like generational teaching because, you know, I live in a place where there is oral tradition and there are stories that are told. And what I want to say is that what we've seen within our communities is that the families who are serious about Christ are different than the families in the community. So they all share the same oral traditions, right? And when people become Christians in our community, yeah, things change for them, but not every, like, they don't, a lot of people haven't dropped every, like, cultural tradition at all, at all. Like, they live in the same houses, they still herd animals, they still have camels, they still have funerals the same way they would. In fact, in our culture, we only have one couple out of 100+ thousand people who've actually been married legally in a church. So they're still getting married traditionally, right? So they have all these same things. But the ones that are in the church, the ones that are serious about Christ, there is a difference in their families. Their husbands are watching out for their wives in ways that men in the community don't watch out for their wives. The wives are loving their children in ways that women in the community often aren't loving their children. They're not engaging in drinking like people in the community do. Their homes are peaceful. They're kind to outsiders, as opposed to our community can be really harsh on outsiders. They tend to get picked out for leadership in the community because the community sees there's a difference. You know, so I do think there are generational oral traditions that can be passed down, but there's also something that changes when a person becomes a Christian. And I had a friend when we were raising our kids, we were little, she's an American, you know, and this is when my kids were 5 and under. And I said to her, I said, you know, when you read your story to your kids, right, you'll just ask them questions. And a lot of homeschooling is just, you know, you read together and you're going to ask your little 5 or 6 year old a question. Did you understand that? And what did you think about that? And she says to me, Rachel, before I was a Christian, I never would have done that. I would have just read the book and put it away. It wouldn't have occurred to me that I could think about the story, think about what it means, and discuss that with my child. But when I became a Christian and the Holy Spirit came into my heart, it changed that for me.
Wow.
And I'm like, there's something that goes on with us cognitively when we're submitted towards Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the thought to get in deeper, to get to know, more about something, to know more about things. I think that, that's ingrained in us, or I would say maybe how we're created to have that mind, to learn and to grow and then to share it. And obviously that comes out in those people that look different, or they obviously are interacting differently and everything. It's not like it's a conscious effort that they have made to be different. It's because now they're stepping into who they were created to be in the first place, and that's just going to pour out of them.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Is that when you become, when your life has changed, when Jesus gets a hold of you, you are made to be more of who he's made you to be.
Yeah.
Like you actually are more yourself when you're in
Absolutely.
Christ than when you're outside of Christ.
Absolutely. Because we were intended to be one with him. We were intended to walk with him constantly. And so when we are separated from that, we're going to look different. We're going to act different. We're going to do different things. And then when we finally come back to that union that we were supposed to have in the first place, then it's a completely new walk opens up for us, and everything is new. And it's obviously outstanding.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I love this conversation. I love everything about this, and I've just been thinking and praying a lot about this conversation, and just I don't know who out there listening really needs to hear this today. But whoever you are, I mean, just let this sink in, and if you just feel a twinge there about you wanting to maybe dive in a little more. I encourage you to do that. Rachel, I'm going to put Rachel's information. If anybody would like to contact her, please do so. If you would like to contribute, because we did say funds are very, they are helpful, even though human bodies helping is more so what's needed. But I will make sure we have a link where you could help maybe with that. The Village of Hope would be wonderful. And then again, if you're feeling at all led to take a leap, there's a song that my daughter really loves. It's called Jump, and it's by a not well-known group called Crossing Kind, and it's so great because it's talking about this man who is just like not sure what he's going to do for in these different areas, and then it's all about what he just decided to jump, to leap off the edge and do it. And of course, he got to fly, and it was amazing when he did that, that it was a wonderful step, and just taking that step to jump. So I just encourage any of you out there feeling that way, take the jump, do it. I know it'll be well worth it for you. And then getting to step into who you were created to be, getting to really pursue Christ more and share his love with others. That is just such a blessing to everyone around you. And it just, oh man, it lifts you up, and it just such a blessing to yourself as well, getting to walk out the life that you were created to have.
Right. And I would say there's going to be people who are listening today who for various reasons like they would love to go but they absolutely cannot.
Yeah.
Like there's really good legitimate reasons that they cannot. But you know what? Take the leap of
Yeah.
sharing your love and your joy with Christ. Like don't wait around. Like we do not know how long we have on this earth. We don't know how long the person we're meeting today at the grocery store has. And if you have a way to just throw in there like something about the Lord, just do it because you don't know what kind of seeds you're planting. You don't know where people are at. And life is so short.
Absolutely.
We want to do all the good we can while we have time to do it.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Well, Rachel,
Yeah.
thank you so much for sharing today. Thank you for just taking time to come on the podcast. I'm so thankful our paths have crossed, and that you
Yeah.
get to come on and share. And if anybody has questions, please feel free to reach out to me or Rachel. I'll make sure I'll get you in the right direction. And thanks for joining us today, everyone. I look forward to talking to you next time.